Good morning and welcome. My name is Barry. If this is the first time with you, I have the privilege of being the lead pastor of Bridgewater as well as one of the campus pastors here in Conklin. I want to add to the invite that you saw on the feed. I want to invite you to come out tonight to the Montrose High School. We're going to start the program at 5 o'clock, but doors open at 4:15. There's going to be food, snacks, a chance for you to interact not only with each other, but with people from all of our campuses. So please come out. We've had a good group from Conklin that come every year. And so we want to kind of rock the house from Conklin to be there. But it's really the one time of the year where we pull all five campuses together and we get to celebrate our incredible God together. And it's an awesome opportunity for us to thank him for all the amazing things that he's doing. I want you to know, if we ever start taking credit for what God's doing, we're in some deep weeds, right? And so we want to make sure that we keep pointing the fingers to him, saying thank you for what you do, and we ask that his hand of blessing would still rest on this ministry. When I mean this ministry, I'm talking about the Bridgewater Church at all five campuses, and not only here in Broome County and Susquehanna County and Wyoming County, but that his hand would rest, a blessing would rest on those people who we partner with around the world. And so we're excited about what God's doing. We want God to keep doing a great work. And one of those things that we need to do is keep coming back together and saying, thank you, God. Thank you for what you are doing. So please join us tonight. If you've never been to a celebration, it's kind of crazy. You think you're crazy. We're kind of the middle of the road is crazy when it comes to campuses. There are some campuses out there that are just out there. And so we're kind of more of the, we're mild. We're right in the middle of the road, mild. And so if you want to come have a blast, come on down and we're looking forward to our time together. This morning, we're in the second week of our Be Rich series. And last week we talked about if you made $32,400 a year. Now I want you to catch that, $32,400 a year. You are in the top 1% wage earners in the world. Doesn't that blow your mind? If you make $15 and around 60 cents an hour, you are one of the top wage earners in the entire world. Now, some of you can say that's great when you compare yourself to third world countries, but we're talking about places like Britain and China and Japan and Germany and all these places, you're in the top 1%. And when we compare ourselves to others, oftentimes we're worried about things. We're worried about our struggles. Man, we got to pay for this car loan, for our second car, for our third car. We struggle because you know what? Our cable bill went up, and how unfair is that, right? I can't believe they're charging us this much for our cable bill. We struggle with things like our credit card debt, and what we're doing with a credit card is we keep going out to eat. Whether we have the money or not, it doesn't really matter. We just go out to eat. We spend things. We upgrade stuff that's not broken because we just want something that looks different. And as we continue to upgrade things, then we start struggling with credit card debt. And those are the things that we struggle with in life, right? I can't believe they upgraded my cable bill. But when you look around the world, there are people who are really struggling with just saying this, I wish I had a meal and good water to drink every single day. That's my struggle. My struggle is not a cable bill. My struggle is to survive. And so we're in the midst of this, talking through this. There's a recent article in The Atlantic by Alana Samuels, and she said this. Here are some of the trends in America, which is very interesting. I know we don't have a lot of money. We all complain. We complain all the time. We don't have enough. We don't have enough. We don't have enough. But America has spent, listen to this, $240 billion on jewelry, watches, books, luggage, telephones, and other related communicated equipment. That's twice as much as the inflated adjusted dollars as we spent in 2002, twice as much. We are spending so much more. Here's another interesting fact. During the same time period, we also doubled what we spent on our personal care products. You know, we got to have stuff for our hair, right? We got to like wash it and then do whatever we do to it after that. We keep doing it. We have like three or four different bottles. I don't know if you're like my wife. They're like, what do you have all those bottles for? Oh, it's a process, right? You got to do this and this. And so we spent twice as much on our personal care products as we did like 20 years ago, even though the population has only grown at 13%. Isn't it interesting? We spend a lot of money in this nation on stuff. There are more studies that show that the more stuff we have, the more places we need to store it. And so the average home over the last 20 years has grown by 23%. So the homes that are being built now, over 2,400 square feet, which again is 23% bigger than they were 20 years ago. And back in the day, remember the self-storage units started coming out 20 years ago? I mean, before that, there are 26,000 self-storage units. Now there's like over 52,000 self-storage units. Why? Because Americans got to find places to store their stuff. We have homes for our cars. They're called garages. And we complain, and they're not big enough, so we add on and we put extra garages on. We have little homes, really, for our extra food, and they're called pantries. We have extra homes for almost everything. We have attics and basements, and the shed business is going crazy. Why? Because we need places to put our stuff. So why are we continuing to accumulate more stuff? Is it because Amazon has made it so easy? Or is it because there's something else that we're struggling with? Someone once said, we have bought into the lie that the pursuit of happiness includes the pursuit of stuff. I want to say that again. The pursuit of happiness somehow in our minds becomes this. I'm going to be happy if I continue to pursue more stuff, because the more stuff I have, the happier I will be. And if I die with more stuff, then I win. Unfortunately, it's a fallacy, right? Because we have an America today that seems to be so unhappy and complains about everything, even though we have more than most people around the world. There was a study that was taken, Mark Cohen, who's a director of retail studies at Columbia University Graduate School, and he said this, "We are all about accumulating mountains of things. Americans have become a society of hoarders." So last week, we looked at Proverbs chapter 30, and we said, really, the sweet spot in life is if we have enough for today. If you could grant a wish, if there's a genie in a bottle that you could look to and say, hey, what do you want? If you said, I just want enough for today. If I need to pay for my food, I can reach in my pocket, and there's always going to be enough for today. Proverbs chapter 30, the wisdom writer Solomon says, that's the sweet spot. You have enough to get by today. You have enough to pay your bills. You have enough to eat and to drink. That's awesome. But it also goes on that if you don't have enough for today, and we're not talking about poor money management, but people around the world who really don't have enough for today, the proverb says this, then you truly are poor if you don't have enough for today. But those who have extra, those who have food pantries, those who have houses for their clothes called walk-in closets, right? And you have so much stuff, you don't even know where to put your stuff because you have so much. Your drawers are flowing out, right? If we have extra, it says this in Proverbs, that you are rich. So I just want to make sure that we keep perspective as we look at life today, all of us, when it comes to truly how rich we are as a nation. Now, here's the problem. No matter how much you have, no matter how full your sheds, your garages, your attics, your basements, your pantries, and your walk-in closets are, we still complain and we feel like we don't have enough. So the problem is that, not that we're not rich, it's that we're not very good at it. So how do we work through life to realize that let's get the perspective that God has given when it comes to wealth? So that's what we're talking about. So here are a couple of things for I want you to consider. And this is huge for our country. Number one, responsible people face their debts. Responsible people face their debts. Now, too often in our culture, people are not taught or encouraged to take responsibility for their choices. What we have learned to do as a nation is to blame other people and to shift responsibility onto someone else to say this, yeah, I made a mistake, I'm the one who messed up, but somehow it's your fault and you need to take care of it. And as Americans, we don't take care of what we're responsible for. And the same thing is true when it comes to our financial situation. We make poor decisions and we expect someone else to help us when it comes to cleaning it up. We are reluctant to pay what we rightfully owe other people. So this is what it says in Romans chapter 13. If you have a copy of the scriptures, you can turn there. Romans 13, beginning with verse 6. And it says this, "Let no debt remain outstanding accept the continuing debt to love one another, for whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. Sorry, I skipped down. I went down to verse 8. Verse 6. This is also why you pay taxes. I'm having a hard time seeing up here, guys. Sorry. This is what you call age, and I don't want to wear glasses in front of you, okay? I'm just being honest. I'm seriously. I'm old, and I don't want to look any older. So anyways, so this is better, right? Could you hold this in the front row for me? Thank you. Yeah. Hey, look at the screen. Hey, how about it? Well, can I fool you if I do this? Oh, my word. This is awesome. Stop it. This is church. This is also why you pay taxes. For the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. And it goes on in verse 7. Give to everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. Next. I've already read. You've already seen this. This was a peek behind the curtain earlier. Okay, here we go. So let no doubt remain outstanding, except the continuing debt to love one another, for whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. Now, so whether it's taxes or whether we owe someone a wage, whatever it is, it tells us this. Our responsibility is to pay back what we owe people. Now, sometimes you don't hear that because what we try to do in life is we try to justify some way in our mind not to pay what we owe other people. So we come down with this fair and what's unfair. And if we find something that's fair or unfair and we kind of justify it in our mind, then we start doing things that are somewhat unethical. We do things that aren't honest, that don't represent God well. So when you go to pay somebody and you try to find a way to just kind of, you agreed on a price to have a project done at your house. And really, they did a decent job. Maybe it's not everything you wanted it, but then you find a way to not pay them. Not pay them for part of it. When it comes to taxes, we feel like there's times where we look at taxes and say, oh, they're fair or they're unfair. I don't know too many people in life who go, hey, my taxes are fair. That's awesome, right? So we always find it unfair. And so what we do through the tax process is sometimes we create these little things in our minds that we justify the fact that we're going to start taking from the government what we believe rightfully belongs to us. We look at them and we say to them, hey, you're not doing a great job. I don't like what you're doing. And therefore, you're being unfair to me. I'm paying more than I should, which may be true, but I'm paying more than I should. And therefore, you justify in your mind at tax season to cheat the government out of what you rightfully owe them. And what they're saying, Paul's saying is this, I want you to know, what you owe, you need to pay. Is it true that there are times I look at our government and say, man, these guys waste a ton of money, right? When I drive by PennDOT, because I live across the border now, and I see guys like sleeping in the truck, like I sit there and say, that's unbelievable. Why am I paying my taxes? Listen to me. While it's my problem in one way, in another way, it's really not my problem. I need to do what I've been instructed to do and pay my taxes, whether I think they're fair or unfair. If you think the American culture and the American government's messed up, go back to the time that Paul lived and look at Rome. The Roman government was horrendous at what they did. Did they take advantage of people? Absolutely. Were they horrible at what they did to other people? Absolutely. And this is what Jesus said, right? He said, give to Caesar what rightfully belongs to Caesar and give to God what rightfully belongs to God. Now, this is Jesus who the Roman Empire and the Roman government allowed to be crucified, just like Jesus predicted, allowed him to be crucified less than a week after he said that. Jesus knew he was going to die. He knew the Roman government he was going to let it happen, and he still sat there and said, listen to me. You need to pay to Caesar what you owe Caesar. Oh, yeah, I'm going to die, but you still need to pay your taxes. I think about Paul in Romans. He went through a very similar situation. Right? He's writing all these letters. Where's he at? He's in prison. He's under house arrest. Why? Because he wouldn't pay a bribe to Felix, the governor of Judea, and he ended up in prison under house arrest for a couple years, and as he's sitting in house arrest, he's still writing these letters, and he's looking at people and saying this. He doesn't know this, but he's going to die a couple years later under their hands. They're going to execute him, and he still says this. You need to pay what you rightfully owe the Roman government. Are they corrupt? Probably. Are they unfair? Probably. Have they taken advantage of people? Probably. But you need to give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, whether you think it's fair or not. See, we don't hear that today. What we hear about, get away with everything you can, just don't get caught. I'm not sure that's a principle we should live by and that it represents God well. So we go on in Scripture and it says this. Paul says that you need to face your debts as well as your debtors. When you owe people money, can I encourage you practically? Please don't play hide-and-go-seek from them. Face your responsibility no matter what situation you find yourself in. It's uncomfortable to be in debt. It really is. But it becomes even more awkward and more uncomfortable when we start playing hide-and-go-seek with the people we owe money to. Because what happens is they start ramping it up and you start getting phone calls. And then you start getting mail that just drives you crazy because you see and you go, ah, here it comes. And depending on who you owe money to, and especially if you know them, sometimes it may mean they keep knocking on your door saying, when are you going to pay me? We have a responsibility to pay back what we owe someone else. It says this in Psalms chapter 37, verse 21. The wicked borrow, I want you to hear this. I'm not saying this. This is God's word. The wicked borrow and do not repay. But the righteous gives generously. So if we have a fence here, and this is like God's side of the fence, and this is like the evil one side of the fence, if you borrow money and you don't pay it back, you're on that side of the fence. When we make an agreement to borrow money or we sign a piece of paper, it, like you said, let your yea be yea, your nay be nay. You need to make sure that your word is good. And it says that if you don't follow through on your word, it says that's on this side. It literally says back in Matthew chapter 5, you don't have to turn there, anything beyond this, referring to yea be yea and nay be nay, comes from the evil one. If we're not good with our word, if we stand out in the midst of a corrupt society and say we represent Jesus, but we're going to do unethical things because we feel like we're not being treated fairly, I want you to know that we're not representing him well, and that's of the evil one. It goes on and on, the verses on the screen in Proverbs chapter 3. It says, do not say to your neighbor, come back later, I'll give it tomorrow, when you know you have it with you. If you owe someone a debt to whatever degree and whatever amount you have, you need to start making it right. One of the things I recommend to people when they get themselves into debt, and it happens in our society a lot, people are sitting here, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable, because probably a lot of you are in the same boat, because that's the American way today. But if you're in debt and you're having difficulty paying it off, can I encourage you to do something? Face your debtors. Give them a call. Go talk to them and say, here's where I'm at. I have a situation. I'm having a hard time. Can we do something about this? Will you work with me? And what I have found over and over again is this, that people are willing to work with you when you're honest and upfront with them and tell them that you have the best of intentions. And oftentimes, they will put you on a payment plan. Sometimes, they will even reduce what you owe them to say, hey, I get it. Hey, let's just say you owe me this much, and let's pay it over this period of time. But usually when you're honest with people and you work with people and say, I'm trying to do the best I can because I feel like that's what I'm supposed to do, will you work with me? People are usually willing to work with you. Now, people get confused and say this, hey, they don't call me anymore. I'm not getting anything in the mail. I got away with something. Well, first of all, I want you to know the standard we live by is what God says. And if God says we need to pay it back, we didn't get away with anything because God's watching us and he expects us to live righteously. And so we ultimately stand before him. But ultimately, practically speaking, in this world, what happens? You go get a car loan and they say, sorry, you can't have a car loan. You try to go buy a house. Sorry, you can't get a house. Why? Because you have such bad credit. You can say, well, that's easy for you to say. Well, Kim and I, when I was about 28 years old, our youngest son had heart surgery at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. And he went through the whole process, and it's a whole lot of meetings going through the process, a lot of people, a lot of bills. We had insurance. Whew, that's awesome. Went through the process. In the middle of the process and what we were doing, our insurance company went bankrupt. which laid the responsibility on us. And I want you to know, when we were getting these bills, they were astronomical. Think about having heart surgery at a children's hospital and just imagine what the bills were. So what's fair to me? This is not my problem, right? It's insurance. That's their problem. What I did as a 28-year-old kid was I called, and I called every person I owed money to, and I said this: I'm sorry, but I can't pay you back right now. This is what happened. I will do everything I can to make this right. Will you work with me? And it was unbelievable, and what I consider one of the miracles of our life, that as we went through that period of time, we were able to pay bills off. We had people reduce bills, and we were able to pay those bills off. And so many of those bills were just forgiven as we talked to them through programs and through other organizations. Folks, listen to me. I can't stress the importance that when we are to live righteously and represent Christ, that we need to do that in every way. And one of the biggest ways that you're going to represent Christ well is with your finances. And if you have debt, I understand it's the American way, but you need to face your debt and you need to take responsibility for it. Now, I do want to put something in here because I realize that there's some people who've probably filed for bankruptcy or considering it right now. And I want you to know that when you look at the Old Testament as well as the laws of America, there is an allowance for time for debts are written off, like in a form of bankruptcy. So in the Old Testament, what the Jewish people would do is if people got themselves in a world of hurt, often people would have to almost sell themselves into slavery, the Jewish people, the other Jewish people, to help take care of some of the responsibilities they took care of. And they had this debt. But every 7 years, the law allowed for people to be forgiven. Slaves were set free, and debts were forgiven. Even with people who were foreigners, they would do it every 50 years where slaves were released, and the debt was forgiven after 50 years for people. Every 50 years, it was forgiven. So I think there's a place where God understands. We get ourselves into a situation where maybe there's no possible way to pay it off. But I want to say this to you. Please don't utilize the law to avoid your responsibility. Do what you can, and if you get yourself into a situation, then follow the law, do what the law allows, and then make a commitment to say this: I don't want to ever do this again. I don't ever want to find myself in this position again. So, number one, responsible people face their debt. And two, responsible people eliminate their debt. Now, I understand that very few people go through life without having debt. But did you know there's debt that people refer to as okay debt, bad debt, and ugly debt, okay? So bad debt is when you go out and get a car, you buy a car, you drive it off the lot, and the money you own on your car is more than what it's actually worth when you drive it off the lot. So if you pay $30,000 for a car, you drive it off the lot, it's now worth $27,500. You go take it back, 2 weeks later, they're going to say your car's only worth this much. And people get what they call upside down on things like vehicles. And so that's why you'll have a car loan, and 3 years later or 4 years later, it's like, I want another car. And you're out looking at a car, you want to trade it in, and you realize that you're upside down on your car because you still owe more on it than it's actually worth. That's bad debt, okay? Because we're running behind. Now, ugly debt is this. Now, people are going to hit me because every time I talk about this with people, they get mad. But ugly debt is this. When you have no money, but you're still going on vacation, and you're spending $5,000 to $10,000 on vacation you put on your credit card, you get back. Look, I can hear it. Oh, no, I'm gonna get emails that tells me they hate me. But anyways, I'm just telling you, it's ugly debt, okay? So you get back from vacation, unpack your stuff, put it away in the drawers, and what you have now is pictures and memories and say, yay, but what you also have is $5,000 to $10,000 sitting on your credit card that you may be paying for years to come. And so you can look down 18 months from now, looking at your, man, that was a great time, and you're still paying for it. Ugly debt. People do that with going out to eat. They do it with clothes. They do it with other kind of things where it's just, they just get in the hole, and it's absolutely worth nothing. Technically, it's not worth anything, but you're still paying for it years later. Okay debt is when you do this. You go out and buy a home, and in most parts of the country, not necessarily here in the Binghamton area, but if you go out and buy a home, usually it increases in value. I mean, usually you're, But when you buy it and the debt you have and you're paying for it, but what you see is that investment beginning to grow, at least hold its value. So when you turn it around, you get your money back out of it. And so that's where we talk about debt. So there are things there that you have to realize that we're all in a debt, but we have the responsibility to face those debt and pay those debts off. So here's some ways you can free yourself from debt. Work more. I love this verse in Proverbs chapter 26, verse 13. And the sluggard says this: "There's a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets. And as a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed." What does it mean? Basically this: lazy people will come up with whatever excuse they can not to work. There is a big, scary lion out there. I can't come to work. You laugh and go, who would do that? I have a I have this horrible cold that I can't come to work. People will make up all kinds of excuses not to work. It's too hard. I don't get paid enough. I don't like what I do. Listen to me. Some of you have fallen under this fallacy like work will be fun and fulfilling all the time. If you have that kind of job and there's no problems at all, tell me about it, okay? Because that'd be awesome. I'd love to have that job. But reality, there's times we look at work and what's work? Work is work. There's sometimes it's fun and fulfilling, and there's sometimes it's really difficult. You feel the stress and the pressures and the deadlines, and sometimes it's absolutely tough. But I want you to know that God uses what's called work for you to pay your bills, to put a roof over your head, clothes on your back, and gas in your car. See, the problem is because we messed up, right? If Adam and Eve, and we were all with Adam and Eve in the garden, if they didn't mess up and we were kind of with them when it happened, but if they didn't mess up, we wouldn't have to be worrying about any of this stuff, right? Because God said, here's a garden. It's perfect. It's great. I'm providing you with everything that you need. It's right here. The biggest work you have to do is go pick the stuff off the tree, okay? That's the hardest thing you're going to do because I've created this environment for you that I will take care of you. And what did people say? God, no thank you. I want to do it my way. I don't like the way you've done it. I want to do it my way. And part of the consequence of the fall back in the garden says this, that men, you will work by the sweat of your brow the rest of your life. Why? Because we looked at God and said, no thank you. I don't want your kind of life. I want to do it my way. Well, now you get to do it your way. And doing it your way means this: you have to work. It's part of the consequences of the fall. So one of the ways you get out of debt is by working more. There has been a tremendous decline in the American work ethic. Can I get an amen? Amen. When I was running 7 stores before I came here, we would hire people, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. You have to be kidding me. I would travel to one of our stores out west, western New York. I drove all the way out for an interview. This is not in my notes. You're getting this for extra. This happened multiple times, and I went through an interview process. Somebody looking for a job. And basically through the interview process, I realized that they really didn't want the job. And so I looked at them and said, why did you do this? Because I'm required to in my unemployment. I have to go through so many interviews at a time. And they blew you off. So I drove all the way out here for a couple hours to meet with you to interview for a job so you can put a check in the box for your unemployment. And they said this, I don't want to work. I'm better off not working. We're ever taken care of. Why would I start working? And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. You just wasted my time. And you're wasting my tax dollars because there's jobs to be had. There is a tremendous decline in the American work ethic. What does Proverbs 28:19 says? He who works his land will have abundant food, but the one who chases after fantasies will have his fill of poverty. Proverbs 10:4-5 says, lazy hands make for a poor man, but diligent hands bring wealth. He who gathers crops in the summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps during the harvest is a disgraceful son. I want you to know that financial stability and a good work ethic go hand in hand. Teach your kids that. You work hard in your life and there will be financial stability. Sometimes the problem is not that we work hard. People work 60, 70 hours a week and they're still not getting out of debt. Well, maybe the next thing is for you, spend less. Maybe you just need to spend less. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20, it says this, "In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has." I like the Good News translation. It says this, "Stupid people spend their money as fast as they get it." That's not me. I didn't say that. That was in the Good News translation. I know it sounds kind of rude, but it really does get the point across. If you're wise with your finances, you will be spending for the rainy day. There is food in your freezer. There's peanut butter in your pantry. You have money in your bank for things that are going to happen that are unexpected. Some people say, my car broke. How was I supposed to know that? Dude, if you have a car, I'm going to give you a hint. It's going to break, okay? I'm just saying, it's going to break. You can plan on it. You have to put tires on it every, 35,000? It's going to happen, okay? So what you do is wise people put money away preparing for that day that it happens. So you don't go into debt and say, I have no money. There's my credit card. You know, your refrigerator breaks. Listen to me. Now you buy a refrigerator, they say, what? You'll be lucky to get 8 years out of it. Are you kidding me? You talk about work ethic. But anyways, 8 years out of a refrigerator? So right now, I'm putting money away for my next refrigerator. Yeah, I just got it last year. But I know in 7 years from now, I'm going to have to get another refrigerator because that's what they tell you. So you start planning ahead because listen to me, if you don't start saving now, I promise you this, you will go into debt. If you don't save for the tires on your car that are going to happen every 40,000 miles or whatever, you're going to go into debt. If you don't save for the refrigerator, it's going to go in debt. You realize things happen. Your furnace is going to break down. Things are going to happen. And you plan ahead of time. It doesn't say people who make more money are wise and people who make less money are foolish. It says this, those who don't have a buffer are foolish and those who have a buffer and save and put away for that rainy day are wise. And what I found is this, so often people who make a lot of money have faith in their money and oftentimes are really poor money managers and sometimes are the foolish are foolish people. When I used to do financial counseling, the people I would counsel the most were people who had way more money than I did. And they could never seem to get out of debt, and they kept going farther and farther in the hole. Man, I was like choking when they told me how much debt they had. I was like, oh, and you guys make this much money? Listen to me. It doesn't matter how much you make. It's what you do with what you make. And there's some people who make very little money. And I tell you what, they've been good. And they've lived within their budget, and they save money. And as they get down to the end of their life, you talk to them, you think, man, they never made a lot. They never had a big-time job. And you find out how much they have. It's like, what? Why? Because they manage their money well. The Bible calls them wise. I'm going to say this again. If you're not committed to saving, you will go into debt. Period. Finally, and my time's gone, spend later. The average American household pays $904 annually just on interest on their credit cards. $904 a year in interest. They pay over $370 in interest on their vehicle loans. The average person owes $8,700 on their car in America, so you can figure out where you're at in that and say, hey, I'm doing better than the average American. Or you can say, oh, stink, we got work to do. But the credit card debt, the average credit card debt is this. It's $5,700 for credit card debt. For the average person. So if that's what you're doing, we're not talking about any other kind. We're not talking about any other kind of loans. We're just talking about two loans, okay? We're talking about your credit card and we're talking about your car. The average American is paying over $1,200 a year in interest just in those two areas. Again, we're not talking about student loans, mortgage, or anything else. We're talking about just those two areas. $1,200. You're spending $1,200, you're taking it, you might as well take it, okay, I had a fire going this morning, you might as well take your money, $1,200, put it in your hands, and do this in the fireplace. Because that's what's happening, it's gone. It goes to nothing. It doesn't go to principal, it doesn't go to anything. Well, I shouldn't say that, it goes to the bank, and they're really happy with you being in debt, because they make a lot of money off it. And so that's why they push to be in debt. So sometimes we have to get to a place where there's delayed gratification when it comes to what we want. Delayed gratification. I don't need to have everything right now. I love it. Today, in today's society, this is what's amazing to me. When you buy big tractors and cars, do you understand those things are impulse buys today? You know, you used to think about going to the store and going, I want a Coke, and hey, what an impulse buy. People are buying cars impulsively. They're walking around the lot, hands to the pot, kicking tires. This is great. Somebody comes out, hey, how are you doing today? I'm doing great. I'm doing good. I got to let you know, it's a great deal. It's a great deal today. Today only for you. I got a great deal for you. And then don't ever go into it, but they have you sit down at the desk, and then you're in deep weeds, okay? You sit down at the desk, you're like, hey. If you sign here right now, I'll even take an extra $500 off. You sign right now. Sign right now. Okay. And people sign. You're buying a car. I never buy a car. They say, I always walk out and say, I'll be back. And they freak out. Like, what do you mean you're going to be back? No, if you walk out of the deal, maybe tomorrow, I'm sure it will be here tomorrow. I'm sure it will be. You still want to sell the car tomorrow, just like today. I'll be back tomorrow. Because if I'm looking for a car, I've been thinking about it for a long time, and I torment my car dealer until I buy it. If you ever want to buy a car, let me know, because I'd love to go with you. Because I, most of you get all nervous. Man, I love this. This is like fun for me. So I take one guy off because he's sitting there going, I was talking to him, I had to trade in, he's figuring out what we're going to do. Okay, so tell me what do they say to you? How much can you afford? Not total, but how much you can afford in your monthly payments, right? Oh, I can afford $400 a month in my monthly payments. Okay. What? What is the price of the car? Oh, we don't know. What do they give you for a trade-in? I have no idea. I just know I can afford $400 a month. Yay. So the guy tried to pull that with me. It's funny. So he starts talking to me. I'm going, so what's my trade-in worth? Well, you see, it comes down to this. I don't do payments. So it's like, hey, no. What are you giving me for my trade-in? He wouldn't answer my question. And I said, listen to me. It's not that hard. I want two numbers. What's my trade-in and what's the price of the car? Well, I'll tell you what. They give you the different, the bunch. Like, seriously, either you answer my question or I'm getting up and walking out right now. My wife can't do this. My wife's sitting in the car because she goes, I do not want to listen to this. Is it really that hard to tell me what you're going to give me for a trade-in and how much the price of the car actually is? Listen to me. We walk into a society today and we blindly walk through going, yay, we just keep signing papers and running credit cards. And before you know it, we're like most Americans where we're so much in a debt that we can't be generous with other people. And it adds this stress and this difficulty in our life. I want you to know, you need to face your debt if you have debt. You need to pay off your debt if you can. The way you do that, work hard. Spend less. And maybe a little bit of delayed gratification where you say, I don't have the money now. You know what some people do? This is crazy stuff. I'm one of them. Why make payments to a bank when you can make payments to yourself? So every month you put money aside for your next car. Brilliant. If you can afford $400 a month, then put $400 away in a savings, put it away. And when it's time to buy a car because your car actually breaks down and you can't run it anymore, then you go buy what you can afford. That's how you stay out of debt. Listen to me. If you don't save, you will go into debt. So here's the end of the whole thing, and I'm sorry I've gone late today. But listen to me. We want to meet people where they're at. If you have a problem with your finances, which please don't feel like I'm the only one because it's an epidemic in America. If you feel like you have a problem with your finances, we get it. First of all, I want you to admit that you have a problem. That sounds like we're in a meeting, right? Admit your problem first. And once you admit your problem, then we want you to do something actually about it, okay? So do something about it. So we want to meet people where they're at in life. That's what we want to do. We want to meet them where they're at in life and help them become what God's called them to be. And so what we're going to do at Bridgewater Conklin Campus, if you need to write this down, if you are in that situation, and everybody's looking around to see who's writing it down, okay? So we want you to know we're all looking, there are people who have problems over there. No, this is a judgment-free zone, and I mean that. We want people here. We want to help them. So what we're doing in January, starting in January, we're going to be offering a Financial Peace University here at the campus on Tuesday nights. And it's going to be from 6 o'clock to 7:30. It's for 9 weeks, and it's going to cost you $109 to do it, because that's what we get charged for doing it. $109 for Financial Peace University. 1.5 hours for 9 weeks. I've talked to people from our campuses. We're going around doing it at the different campuses, so we may not be able to offer this for a while, but we're offering it now. So it starts in January. Let me see the date. I think it's January 8th, and it ends on March 5th. And what we're going to do is have this program. And when I've talked to people from other campuses, I met people from the Halstead campus just recently. I was helping some people move, and I was down there talking to them. And I said, hey, how's your life going? Tell me your story. And they said, you won't believe it. We went through this financial piece, and our life has radically changed. Because what it does is it brings financial peace. So if that's something you need in your life, man, I tell you what, there's so many of us who need it. And so I would encourage you to plan for it, save 10 bucks a month, put the money away, and in December, we're going to start signing up for Financial Peace University by Dave Ramsey. I want you to know it's changed a lot of people's lives when it comes to finances. It has truly brought them financial peace. Guys, I want you to know, no matter where you're at, in your journey financially, we all need to be the stewards that God has called us to be with the resources he's blessed us with. So let's be good stewards. That's what God calls us to be, good stewards in every way, in our service, in our love, and in our finances. Let's represent him well when it comes to our finances. God, thank you so much for things like this that are so practical but really so relevant for us in America. God, forgive us for the times that we continue to whine and complain about what we have and don't have. Help us to be more grateful for the things that you have somehow poured out on us for no other reason than your grace, your mercy, your love, whatever it is, you've poured it out on us, and we want to come to you and say thank you. But Father, sometimes we're not very good with it, so I pray that you will move us all into the direction so that we will please you in every way with what we do with our finances. And we ask this in your son's name. Amen.